Although I hope you didn't come to hear me, but you came to hear what God has to say through our marriages. I look out across here, and I'm probably the last one that should be up here. A lot of you have a lot of experience in marriage, and I'm pretty young at it yet. But God has given me the opportunity to share, and I want to take that opportunity as He gives them. And as I was thinking about, you know, care groups are taking turns leading, you know, each month, and it was kind of nice that ours fell on March because it gave me a topic to talk about, and so I'm happy for that. And we're gonna watch a video clip, but my dad doesn't have it yet, so I think it's coming here in a minute. But we'll go and get started. Two guys were sitting in a wedding, two little guys, and they were watching what was going on, kind of observing. And one asked the other, it says, "So how many marriages can you have?" His friend whispered, "16, I think." "16? I think so." "Well, how do you know?" "Well, I added it up one time. Every time I come to a wedding, the pastor says, 4 better, 4 worse, 4 richer, and 4 poorer." That adds up to 16. Well, that was kind of humorous. What we're going to talk a little bit about tonight is called Love for a Lifetime. And we're going to talk about how our marriages kind of go through stages, or they call them seasons. And if I had to ask you tonight where your marriage is right now on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you say? Anybody want to be brave and respond? Could you say it's a 10? Would it be a 1? One being the lowest and 10 being the best it could possibly be. What about your wedding day? What would the scale be like on your wedding day? 15. All right, Jared. 15. Is it still that today? Probably 12. Okay. Wow. Awesome. Why don't you get up here? Well, it tends to, you know, our marriages tend to go through seasons, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight a little bit. In the movie, and this may be on the clip, I'm not sure, but I don't know if, I guess most of you have seen the movie. Michael, which is Caleb's friend, he's talking to Michael, or he's talking to Caleb. So you can get that straight. Anyways, he's telling Caleb, he said, "I've seen you run into a burning building to save people you don't even know, but you're going to let your own marriage burn to the ground." And I remember that clip in the movie, and I remember thinking, you know, how often is that true? You know, we're so focused on our agenda, and we'll do a lot of things for other people, but when it comes to our own marriage, sometimes we become lax and maybe a little bit selfish and kind of push our partner off to the side. And, you know, marriage is probably, well, it is the most important relationship here on earth. And I think sometimes we don't treat it that way. And I think it kind of falls back on we kind of get used to how things are going. And life just kind of rambles along. And we expect to come home and see our wife, you know, every day at home. We expect to have, you know, and this is speaking from a man's perspective here. We expect to have our supper ready to go and clean clothes in our drawer. And it kind of just tends to go on. But I think we can take it for granted sometimes. And we can kind of lose focus of how important a marriage is. And just a little bit of my story, and I don't want to bore you with that too much, but before we got married, you know, I had a lot of advice. You know, my dad gave me quite a bit of advice, and as well as a few others. And I had no clue, you know, what they were saying was actually true. You know, that marriages work, and you're going to face hard times. And, you know, at that point, I was at a 15 scale, so I didn't really understand what they were talking about. But as time goes on, you quickly find out that, you know, it does take a lot of work, and there's a lot of give and take. And, you know, when you're sitting at another wedding, you want to kind of stand up and tell people that as a couple walks down the aisle, you want to say, "Hey, you know, What you say in your vows, for better, for worse, richer, for poorer, you better mean that, because it's coming. And so that was a challenge to me. Is the clip ready to go? Yeah, ready to go? Let's go ahead and watch the clip, and then we'll go from there.
Catherine, no?
I'm not going to tell her. If she wants to go ahead and file, that's up to her.
Divorce is a hard thing, man.
Well, if it brings peace.
But Caleb, you want the right kind of peace.
What do you mean by that?
Do you know what that ring on your finger means?
It means I'm married.
Yeah, well, it also means you made a lifelong covenant. You were putting on that ring while saying your vows. The sad part about it is, when most people promise for better or for worse, they really only mean for the better.
Catherine and I were in love when we got married, but today, we're two very different people, all right? It's just not working out anymore.
Caleb, salt and pepper are completely different. Their makeup is different, their taste and their color. But you always see them together. And when you... Hold on just a second.
What are you doing? Michael. Hey. What'd you do that for?
Caleb, when two people get married, it's for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer. In sickness and in health.
I know that. But marriages aren't fireproof. Sometimes you get burned.
Fireproof doesn't mean that a fire will never come. But that when it comes, you'll be able to withstand it.
You didn't have to glue them together.
Don't do it, Caleb. If you pull them apart now, you'll break either one or both of them.
I am not a perfect person, but better than most. And if my marriage is failing, it is not all my fault.
But Caleb, man, I've seen you run into a burning building to save people you don't even know. But you're gonna let your own marriage just burn to the ground.
Michael, you are my friend. And I've allowed you to speak freely with me on this job. Don't abuse it.
Okay, if you have your Bibles, turn to Matthew 19, and I'm going to have it up on the wall, too. Matthew 19, 3 through 6. Jesus was approached by the Pharisees, and I love how his response here at the end, but it says, some Pharisees came to him to test him. They ask, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Haven't you read, he replied, that at the beginning, the Creator made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. So they're no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man separate. And, Jesus was always... I like how his replies were always a question. You know, he always gave a question to the people that were trying to challenge him. The four seasons of marriage. Right now is kind of a pretty time of the year, right? We've got some nice weather coming. Spring is kind of in the air. And, marriage is a beautiful thing. When God ordained marriage, he made it a very beautiful thing. And I think today we've probably... have taken it way past what God has meant for it to be. And I don't have any statistics here. I think Elvin gave some the other Sunday about the divorce rate. But when marriage works together, when a husband and wife come together as one flesh, it's a very beautiful thing. And, in my marriage, we've experienced both ways. You know, when things aren't going so well, it's a bad thing. But when things go the way God intended, it's a very, very beautiful thing. So the first season of marriage is romance, and I think that we all probably know what that is, and probably have all experienced that. You know, when a couple comes together, and you know, most of the time they see each other and they do anything for each other when they start dating, and through the dating process, engagement, and then even through marriage. But I find it interesting, you know, how, you know, and again, I'm a male, so I can only speak from my side of things. But and I think it was alluded to earlier in one of the messages about how men like to chase and like the challenge. But once the challenge is over, then we look for something else to do. And I think that can be part of the reason why we might lose this romance and kind of go through a hard time. And I'm going to kind of refer to these seasons as kind of the seasons of the year. I'm not sure if that's what they intended me to do or not, but it's kind of how I like to look at this. And romance can kind of fall into the category of summer. It's kind of a warm feeling. And you know, we all enjoy the warmth of the sun. And sometimes it gets really hot. But most times, I like the warmth more than the cold. So, this first season is romance. Let's go back here. And I think we all know couples that are romantic. We can see them and we can look at them and say, well, that's going to wear off. You know, that they might as well enjoy it while it lasts because it's not going to last very long. But there's nothing wrong with being romantic, right? I mean, that's we you know, some couples may do that about once a year, over Valentine's Day, you know, that's okay to have those days. But I think it needs to be more often than that. And I think God intended for couples to be romantic, and to stay in this stage. But during romance. And all of you probably maybe experienced this or know people that do, you know, everything is okay in the world. You know, we're going through a tough time in our economy right now, but with a couple that's really romantic or really in love, you know, it doesn't really matter because they have each other. And I thought it was kind of funny, some of the things I had in here. It said, during this romantic time, this is when the women tend to lose weight and men spend all their money. Our men are broke. Because women would rather think about their husband or their guy more than eat. And then the man is out buying all these gifts for her rather than paying the rent. And so that tends to be, you know, maybe what some couples have to face. Here's a quote from M. Scott Peck. I don't know who he is, but he said, "This phase of love, this romantic phase of love, is a prank played on us by otherwise rational minds to trick us into doing things that we would normally never consider." And I think that happens sometimes. You know, we get so caught up in the feeling of love that we'll do extraordinary things for our mate that normally we wouldn't really think of. But what does romance look like? Is it two couples that are, you know, always holding hands? Or is it a, you know, I'll love you if you love me? You know, I'll give something if I get something in return. You know, I think that when you're in that romance stage, you're just loving that person. You're not really worried about what you're going to get in return. And as marriage goes on, you tend to realize that if I keep giving and don't get back, you know, it's not going to last very long. And then we become selfish. And the question to consider is, would you still love your spouse if they didn't love you in return? That a couple weeks ago, when we had our prayer coffee or whatever you call it downstairs on Thursday mornings, I was really challenged with that, about the way we love sacrificially, and not expecting anything in return. What causes us to lose the romance? You guys have any? I want this to be kind of open. If you guys have something to share, I don't want to be up here talking all night, but. Is there anything that jumps out right off the bat that you can think of back in the first part of your marriage that would cause you to lose your romance? Reality of life? Mm-hmm. Get too busy? Mm-hmm. Busyness? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I seen a stat that it says this period of romance, and this doesn't, you know, this isn't saying this is how all couples do this. I guess it's just an average. But the period of romance lasts about 2.5 years. After that, it kind of tends to move into the next season. But maybe some signs that you've lost the romance, and you know, we've heard the quote, you know, I guess the honeymoon is over now, is maybe the first time your wife will holler at you after you leave the toilet seat up, or she's too tired to cook, so she makes a TV dinner, or maybe you're just too tired to, the men are too tired to get out and open the car door for her. You know, those are some things that we kind of, you know, you kind of see, and then they kind of fade out. And I know couples that still do some of these things as far as, you know, opening the car door and that kind of thing. And that really sticks out, especially when they get older. You know, you don't see that as much anymore. But those kind of things really, really stick out. And I think losing the idea that we're one, you know, when the Bible says that when we become married, we become one flesh. And I think a lot of times, if we get different ideas and what Elvin said about being busy, we're going all different directions and we forget about that we're actually supposed to be communicating and making decisions with each other. And we kind of get so hectic, so caught up in things going on around us that we forget about our marriage as a bond. So that kind of leads us, when you kind of lose that romance, it kind of leads us into the next stage of reality. And Elvin did mention that little bit about reality. Reality is when the leaves fall off the trees, right, in the fall. The leaves come off, and you can kind of see what a tree really looks like. Maybe the first time you see your wife without any makeup on. Or, you know, as a wife, maybe you start to notice all his noises that he makes. You know, maybe he snores or other grunting noises or something. But it tends to be at this point where you kind of see how this person really is. And it's at that point, it's like, okay, what did I do here? You know, who did I marry? You know, we tend to see the imperfections, and they come shining through. And some people even ask, you know, now that I'm married, what do I do? You know, what do I do with this person that I'm married to? And they give the illustration here about, you know, a dog chasing a car. You know, dogs love chasing after cars, but when they catch a car, what are they going to do with it? And again, that kind of goes back to us men a little bit. Sometimes we chase and chase, and then once we finally catch and we conquer the challenge, then we get bored and we want to move on to something else. And a lot of times our wives get left behind because of that. I think, you know, once this romance wears off and the reality sets in, then we have to make a decision. You know, what are we going to do? Are we going to keep going? Are we going to make the marriage work? Or are we going to just let it, like they said in the movie, let our marriage burn down? Author Wayne Oates writes this. He says, all couples have friction during the first 2 years of marriage over several adjustments. They have to work out a mutually satisfying routine of work, sleep, social activities, and frequency and form of sexual relations. They need to agree about how to be involved in the rituals of each other's parental families at major holidays and family rituals. They must learn the subtleties of each other's nonverbal behaviors and the ways of communicating feelings. They have to come to terms with the desires to change each other, and they must make explicit the unspoken and previous unconscious assumptions about marriage that they brought into their union. A lot of big words in there, but basically there's a lot of choices to make, a lot of decisions that you got to come together as a couple and make. And, you know, sometimes couples come together and maybe have a clash of family values, you know, deciding what they're going to stand on, how they're going to raise their family. And, you know, oftentimes the things that, you know, attracted you to your mate all of a sudden now are reversed, and they're the things that kind of, you know, make you kind of like, oh, you know, I didn't know she did that, or I didn't know he did that. You know, such things as if you were attracted to him because he was outgoing and he was life at the party, now you may see him as, you know, he can never stop talking, and I'm always waiting on him. You know, he acts outrageous, does outrageous things, you know, doesn't really think before he acts. And maybe your wife was a really neat person, and that's what attracted you to her. Maybe she always had every hair in place, and now, you know, when you're in a hurry, she's got to take time to get ready, and, you know, we're always late for things and that kind of thing. So things kind of change a little bit in the traits that we see in our mate, and sometimes we, those things that attracted us to them are the very things that maybe turn us against them a little bit. Okay, and then this kind of pushes us into the next season of resentment. And this is kind of like the winter, you know, when it gets cold. And this is where the real decision has to be made. What are we going to do? You know, you go through the romance, and then reality sets in, and then now you're at a point where you may be resenting the fact that you even got married to this person. And again, I know there's probably marriages that don't go through this. I would say that most of them probably do. They, at one point or another, they go through a time of really questioning their decision. And during this season, you know, frustration kind of sets in for you and your mate. And nothing you do is the right thing. You know, every decision that you make, it's always the wrong one, it seems. And then all of a sudden, your mate becomes a target of your frustration. And you know, the very person that you used to be affectionate with, now you're getting frustrated with, and things are not going well. To quote from the movie again, Caleb said that, you know, he's not a perfect person, but he's better than most. And he said, if his marriage is failing, it's not because of him. It's not his fault. And during this resentment time, that's kind of what couples go through. It's not my fault. It's my spouse's fault. If my spouse would just change a little bit, things would be okay. You know, and there's all kinds of things that could contribute to this. Maybe it could be financial things. You know, maybe she spends too much or he makes too little. The friction that can be involved in the marriage, you know, maybe he started a little heated debate, or maybe she's too sensitive. You know, she needs to grow up a little bit. But during this time, the resentment, you have to make the decision. What are we going to do? What's going to happen from here? And you know, in the first season, romance, it's kind of a warm feeling. It's kind of a you know, it's a feeling that just comes on you, and it feels like you're in love. But the more I read and the more I learn, love is a choice. It really is. It's not really an emotion. It's a choice that we have to make. In Colossians 3, Paul gives us some instructions on loving, or on things that we can do for our spouse. In Colossians 3:12, he says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." And you know, if you have to put on love, that isn't necessarily a feeling. That's something that you have to choose to do. You know, I think, you know, with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, those five things, I think those are very, very important in the marriage, in our marriages. I think Paul's telling us that we need to bring those in. You know, and during this time, a lot of questions will flood your mind. You know, where do I go from here? You know, where do I go to get help? And at this point, if you're able to show that sacrificial love, that unselfish love, that's going to go a long ways in helping you overcome this. So when we go through romance, first stage, reality sets in, and then we're in resentment, where it's a decision time. The fourth season, which is spring, is rebuilding our marriages. And this is a time when a lot of marriages don't make it this far. A lot of marriages will end at the third season, or maybe the second season. And a lot of marriages will not make it into the rebuilding time or the springtime. But spring, you know, we're in the middle of spring right now, and it's a beautiful time of the year. It's starting to get warm. The leaves come back on the trees, and the flowers start to bloom. And, you know, just like we can see our mate again, kind of like we saw them on our wedding day, becomes a beautiful thing. Fresh new start and rebuilding. I want to give you three skills of lifetime lovers, and this is all going to be kind of based on rebuilding our marriages. And it's going to be the acronym RAD, R-A-D. The first one is remember. Remember you're different and adapt accordingly. You know, I don't think I have to tell you that men and women are different. I think we all know that. But I think sometimes us men, you know, again, I'm speaking from the man's perspective, we'll respond out of how we want to be treated. And, you know, we'll respond to our wife as we would like to be responded to. And I think a lot of times us men can get in trouble that way. If we can learn to see things from our wife's perspective, and then vice versa, you know, wife can see things from her husband's perspective, I think a lot of our issues would go away. It'd be a lot easier to work through anyway. So remember, you're different, adapt accordingly. Men tend to talk in generalities, and we talked about that before. How men are factual. Let's get the facts down. You know, what are the facts and what's going on? Women talk in specifics. You know, and they may have a long, drawn out conversation where men are just to the point. And I think we need to remember that. Men tend to be in touch with their thoughts first, and then their feelings. In other words, if I ask, you know, one of you guys how you feel about a certain issue, you're probably going to tell me what you think rather than how you feel. And you know, maybe some of those are kind of related, but we tend to be us men tend to be quick to tell you what we think about something, and women, on the other hand, tend to be in touch with their feelings more than their thoughts. And you know, if there again, this is where we can get in trouble as men. If we come home and ask our wife what she thinks about something, she's going to tell us how she feels, and that may be more of an answer than we wanted. You know, that's not what we're looking for. We're just wanting to know what you think about it. Give me your opinion. But she may go into expressing how she feels about something. You know, men and women have different ideas about how an evening should be spent. You know, maybe a man comes home and he's ready to relax and get the newspaper and see what's going on in the world. And so he kicks his feet up on the recliner when he gets home. And that's his evening. You know, maybe he's ready for supper a little later, and he just kind of wants to be left alone. Well, a woman, you know, maybe she wants to talk about it today and talk about what went on that day, and maybe something happened in the news that she really has something that she wants to talk to her husband about. And again, these things can kind of creep up, and before you know it, it's turned into something huge, turned into something that you're maybe disagreeing about, and it may not even be over that subject, maybe over something that we're not getting along with how we're feeling and how we're thinking. Men and women appreciate sex from different perspectives, and I think that's important to remember as well. Men tend to be physically oriented, while women tend to be relationally oriented. And so often, I think, you know, as a man, you know, after something happens, you have a disagreement or something, you think a good way to make up is, you know, through sex. The woman is the opposite. You know, she'd rather work through all of this, and then, you know, before they would have sexual relations. So there's a lot of things that we got to consider and remember that we're how different we are. And, you know, it's crazy how the saying goes about opposites attract. And not just men and women, but opposite personalities. And so often those oppositions can get in the way of our relationships. But I think it's important that we remember that we are different, and God made us that way. But the way that he has set up marriage, it's a beautiful thing. And if we can remember that. So that's R, remember you're different, adapt accordingly. A is asking and granting forgiveness. Now, I don't know about you, but this is a hard one for me. Admitting that I'm wrong, saying I'm sorry, is not something that comes easy for me. Forgiveness is one of the hardest things to seek, and I think it's very, very important in a marriage. I'm going to read this little excerpt written by J.D. Holt. One of the first lessons I learned in our marriage was the necessity of saying I'm sorry. My wife Christy is much better than I am. In fact, it seems that whenever we had a disagreement, she would be the first to apologize. Due to my delicate male ego, I would let her. After one of our discussions, Christy decided that it was my turn to say I'm sorry. Since I wasn't used to apologizing, I thought nothing of the stony silence that existed between us for the next hour. However, I caught her nonverbal message after a while. Either you apologize or face the consequences. As a newlywed, it didn't take me long to figure out what those consequences might be. But I was feeling stubborn that evening and thought maybe I could outwait her. I was wrong. There was no way she was going to apologize first. She had made up her mind. The next move was up to me. I knew I should do my part. Christy was a very forgiving person. And after all, wasn't I the head of the home? Wasn't I the one who was supposed to be showing the way? Wasn't I to love Christy as Christ loved the church? Finally, I dropped to my knees, not to pray, although I probably should have. I dropped to my knees so I could crawl across the living room and beg Christy's forgiveness. It was a well-calculated move, and it brought the desired result, laughter. For all her determination, she couldn't stay mad at me when she saw her penitent husband crawling on the floor. When I finally reached her, we collapsed in each other's arms, almost simultaneously saying, I'm sorry. The ice had been broken, and we could return to the joys of our relationship. Since that time, I've said, I'm sorry, many times. Sometimes I've added flowers or a gift. I doubt I'll ever be as quick to forgive Christy, but I'll never forget the lesson I learned that night. Love means you always have to say, I'm sorry. And again, that's not always easy. Humility is required to admit failure. You know, you can't say I'm sorry without humbling yourself. And as this guy did, crawling across the floor and begging for forgiveness. And I'm amazed, and I'm speaking about our marriage tonight, and my wife's not here, but I'm not going to say anything that she wouldn't approve of. But I don't know. It's amazing how things go. You know, one night things are just going great. You know, and one day, you know, things are going well. Everything's going smoothly. The next day can be the total opposite, and you can be at total odds. But it only takes, you know, a person humbling themselves and saying they're sorry. And a lot of times, granting that forgiveness can be hard. You know, it can be hard. And I think your spouse can tell when you're truly sorry. You know, if you seek the forgiveness, they can tell if you're humbly coming to them and seeking for repentance. Okay, the next one here for D, R-A-D, is deciding to love and keep on loving. And, you know, in the rebuilding process, that's huge. And Satan knows exactly where your weaknesses are and where your partner's weaknesses are. And he loves to pick on those and bring those to light. And so in those times, choosing to love is very, very important. Again, love is an action, because there's times you're not going to feel like loving your mate. But it's at this point where you have to choose to love. And it's not an emotion. And sometimes you feel it. You know, sometimes you get the feeling of love. But it's something that you have to choose to do. 1 Corinthians 13, and we had this in our Bible memory last month at school. But it talks about love being patient, kind, not envious, not boastful, not proud, not self-seeking, not easily angered. Does that sound like an emotion to you? I think it's an action. I think God is trying to tell us that love is an action. And love will hang in there through good and bad, richer and poorer. Love is going to be there. Love is something you can always hold on to. The three skills to rebuilding: remember, asking, and deciding. That's what we remember. And the rebuilding process of our marriages, you know, these three things are important. Remember that we're different, asking for forgiveness and granting forgiveness and deciding to love and keep on loving. Why are relationships important? Why is it important to keep your marriage at the forefront of your everyday life? Why is that important? Is are relationships something to take lightly? When you see somebody at their deathbed, what are they usually wanting? Are they wanting more money? Are they wanting more? Maybe they're wanting food, but what is one thing that they really want? A family, a relationship. And I think relationships, and especially our marriage relationship, is very important. And you know, I think, like Elvin shared last week, I think a lot of the responsibility falls on us guys. And you know, God has put us at the head of the house, and there's so many times where we demand respect, and we demand that our wife follow what we ask her to do. But there's other times where we fail to lead, and you know, I found out that my wife really does want me to lead. She does want me to be the man of the house. She needs that. God created her to have somebody to over her to lead her. And, you know, when things aren't going right, it's so easy to point my finger in the other direction and say, if you just change your attitude, change what you're doing, things would change. But so often the finger has to be pointed back on us men. And, you know, our wives are going to follow where we lead them, you know, and spiritually speaking as well. You know, how important is your devotional life? I know that's something that we really desire to do, and it's a struggle sometimes. Satan likes to pour all kinds of things into our lives, make us busy, and you know, even if it's good things, so often we get so caught up doing things for the Lord that we kind of tend to push our families behind, and I think we need to be careful with that. But how many of you want to deepen your marriage, and which season is your marriage in? You know, we don't really have any. Well, maybe Frank and Shannon are still newlyweds, less than a year. But are you still in the romantic stage? Are you in reality, or resentment, or are you rebuilding? That's a question I want you to think about tonight. Where are you at? And where do you want your marriage to go? Which season do you want to be in? And I think all of us would say we want to be in the romance stage, right? Or in the rebuilding stage, in the springtime when it's when everything's blooming, and it's such a beautiful thing. But what do you envision 10 years from now? How do you envision your spouse? Maybe 20 years from now, or 50 years from now? How do you view your spouse? Do you Jared's back there knitting. But do you view her as an old, you know, an old lady or an old man that, you know, in their wrinkles? Or do you see them just as beautiful as you've seen them on your wedding day? You know, it's something to think about. And when you get older, will you be able to sit down and remember back to maybe your first Christmas, or your maybe taking your child home from the hospital the first time, your first child? These are memories that you need to cherish and really think about. You know, there's couples that have a lot of memories that aren't so good that they have to think about, and those are the ones we kind of want to push behind. But take time. And again, this was a huge challenge for me to be able to sit down and go through this. I did not feel worthy to lead this tonight, but God really spoke to me, and He's been speaking to me the last couple weeks. On our marriage, and you know, we didn't talk a lot about children tonight, about how important our marriage is for our children. But I, in the short time that we've had Connor, he's only 9 months old, he knows when things aren't right between mom and dad. He knows. And even if she's chasing me on the house or something, he senses that. He's not too happy about that. And so our children, even at a young age, they need us. They really do. And they need us. They need our marriages to, oh my goodness. I said I wasn't going to say anything and got my wife in trouble, but maybe I did. All in fun. But our children need us to get along. They need us to have that good relationship with each other. And, you know, if mom and dad are getting along, it tends to kind of to flow down. And going through this, I had to think about, you know, the different seasons here. You know, isn't our Christian life kind of the same way? You know, when we become a Christian, we're in that romance stage, that we have that feeling, that good feeling of being in love with Jesus. And you know, we'd do anything to serve him. We go out and witness, and we can't wait to tell somebody what he's done for us. You know, and when we first get married, oh, yeah, I just got married, and my wife's just great. But soon reality sets in, right, in our Christian life. All of a sudden we realize, you know what, things are different. Things are different than they were when I first became a Christian. And then the resentment may set in. And then at that time, you have to make a choice. You know, am I going to serve Christ? Am I going to keep going with him? Or am I just going to push it aside? Am I going to divorce him? And then may be a stage of rebuilding there. And I think, again, I'm alluding to some of what Elvin shared. Your Christian life, where you're at with Christ, may determine where your marriage is at with your partner. I think that's so true. If you're on the right track with Christ, it tends to be a lot easier to treat your spouse the way you're supposed to. I know for me, when I get my own agenda and I tend to push Christ back a little bit, my relationship with my wife goes downhill, and I tend to be more selfish, and I tend to respond out of that selfishness. And in closing here, this may be uncomfortable for some of you, and I'm not going to make you do it. My wife's not here, so I guess I don't have to. But what I like to do is I'm going to have up on the wall, and I'm going to let you spread out. You can spread out all over the auditorium if you want to. But I got some wedding vows up here, and this is the love dare challenge for the week, was to renew your wedding vows. And I don't know if we have any singles here or not, but I had put some stuff there for singles too. But think about where your marriage is at. Think about what season are you in. And where do you want to get to? And maybe discuss that with your spouse. And if you feel comfortable doing this, that's great. Doing that, and you can continue your conversation at home, I guess. Maybe some of you are still repeating your vows. It's good. You know, I think all of us want to eventually work back into that romance cycle, into that romance stage, right? And you know, maybe if we work our way back around to that, it may not be as sizzling hot as it was to begin with, okay? But it can be renewed, and I think our love for each other can be renewed. And we hear this saying, you know, at the end of a book sometimes it says, and they lived happily ever after. I don't think that's always true. And I think, you know, if we can get back to this, into this rebuilding stage and get back to the romance, people will say they lived mostly happily ever after, okay? And that's good. And, you know, people say maybe they had a really good marriage. So that's about all I have tonight. I thank you for listening. And why don't we have a word of prayer? Before we do that, does anybody have anything you want to share? Elvin shared a little bit about his excitement. Anything stuck out to you that you want to share with the rest of us that I didn't touch on? Okay, anybody else? All right, let's have a word of prayer, and then I'll turn it over to one of you to close, I guess. Is that right? Or do I just close? He can close. Okay. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Lord, I thank you for being with us tonight and for speaking to us about our marriages. And Father, I know I've been challenged in studying for this, and the different ways that I can treat my wife differently and show show her real love and choose to love her, Lord, not just base love on a feeling. And Lord, I know that all marriages maybe at different stages and go through these different seasons. Father, and I pray that if there's marriages here tonight that maybe are in the stage of giving up, I pray that you would just help them to keep going and to keep loving and choosing to love and to seek forgiveness and to keep moving forward and to seek you with everything they have. Lord, marriages, it almost seems today that more often than not they're failing, and Satan is creating so many different things in the marriages and splitting them up, and I just pray that we as Christians could just be a shining light to the world and show them what a true marriage can look like, and first of all have our relationship with you for right, and then that will come down into our relationships with our spouse. And I just pray that you would be with each of the couples here tonight and help them as they go through this week to continue to have that desire to love each other the way that you've loved us. And just bless our night in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.